to a nicer guy, it couldn't happen.
I'm the man of the hour, the man with the power.
Diamonds are forever.
He put hard times on Dusty Rhodes and his family.
And what you gonna do, Andre?
History beckons the Macho Man.
Yeah. The best there is, the best there was.
Austin 316 said I just whipped your ass.
Two words for ya.
Two words.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Journey Into Wrestling, the spin-off wrestling podcast from Journey Into Comics. I am one of your hosts, the Undisputed Champion Brando, right along with the Journey Into Comics founder, the World Wrestling Federation champion, Nate.
Ooh, I love that you gave me the World Wrestling Federation title. By default, I automatically win with one of the two greatest belts in the history of the industry, which is either the Winged Eagle or the Attitude Era World title, which I've got one signed by Mick Foley himself, Hardcore Legend. How's it going, Brando?
It's going pretty good, man. You know, we had a pretty busy weekend in the world of wrestling. And of course, if anybody just listening to this for the first time and expecting us to cover everything in wrestling, we kind of don't. We mainly cover WWE, and that's okay with us because TNA, or they're no longer, I don't know if they're called TNA anymore. I think they've officially dropped
Impact
the name.
Impact Wrestling.
But, you know, they've kind of been shite for, you know, since the Hogan years, and I really don't, I don't think I get ROH. I think you can watch it online. And, but, I mean, it kind of is what it is. The WWE puts out so much wrestling, it's like, I can only take so much, and anymore, it's like I kind of keep up with what's going on in wrestling, and if it's something good I want to watch, I watch it. I always watch the pay-per-views. But Nate, how have you been? How has this past since the last time that we talked on Journey to Wrestling? How has the wrestling world been to you?
Here's a couple things I can tell you, Brando. One, I tried to tune in randomly to TNA. That didn't work. I saw Bobby Lashley on my screen for all of like 3 minutes, and I was like, I got to cut this shit out right now. Like, and then I just shut it off. End of story. I spent the better part of my weekend finishing Holy Foley. That's now on the network, the last 5 episodes. And I could talk about that ad nauseum because I've got a lot of opinions there.
You like to watch a lot of the like network original shows, don't you?
Here's the thing. And I think I realize this. I'm not necessarily just a wrestling fan as much as I'm a people fan. Like, I love seeing people who are in the spotlight, forced to be normal, or what we consider normal, or hopefully the most minimal amount of scripting possible. I know that they said Holy Foley was non-scripted at all, but you can never tell with fucking TV shows nowadays, man. But really, like, between watching Holy Foley, I've been spending so much time on the Up Up Down Down YouTube channel, just watching Xavier Woods, a.k.a. Austin Creed, doing just various types of different video game challenges or different gauntlets where it's like they're going to do a ping pong tournament with all the people, and whoever loses has to have, surprisingly enough, a hot sauce that I've had, Flashbang hot sauce. Spoiler alert, that was Kalisto who lost, and spoiler alert, it almost killed him. But yeah, man, I'm a creature of watching people in their natural habitats or people just being themselves. Like, I get it, you're a character on TV, and in some regards, I get it, like, I fell in love with those characters, but like really? No matter what happens to Xavier Woods in the WWE, I'm always going to be a fan of him as a person. And that, to me, matters more in the long term for him as a wrestler, because now I'm invested in a person who could be whatever character. I like the person, you know? So, you know, really watching all these different things is just a good way to kind of like figure out what draws me to these characters. With the Holy Foley thing, it's cool to watch somebody who I've met in real life and who is a hardcore legend and who literally shaped a lot of my childhood and my love for wrestling. Just being a dude, and this is like before he started working out, before he cut his hair, before he was really Raw general manager. You know, and seeing some of the behind-the-scenes things there, I think, is really, it's cool. But that's pretty much what I've been doing other than watching the Rumble, which we're going to really dive into today. But what have you been doing in your wrestling world, Brando? Anything special?
Honestly, nothing since the Rumble. I have been making my way slowly through some Raws and SmackDowns, and then I'm on the first one. I started in early June during 2001, right before the invasion. And I kind of want to rewatch the entire invasion angle, kind of starting from this point, because this is when they first started kind of crossing over a little bit. But, you know, I want to say, like, that cage match between Angle and Benoit. It's completely crazy that they let them do those spots, man. With Angle doing the moonsault off the top, and then Benoit, I think that's how he ended up breaking his neck. Or yeah. Having a problem with his spine.
That headbutt.
Yeah, off the top. Anyway, so I'm on the Shane and Kurt match from King of the Ring that year. So I think I have that match and then the main event left. So I've slowly been working my way through that and having a lot of fun watch Austin be a complete and total douche. It is so funny. He is, and you know, they were so on, like, people say the Attitude Era ended at like WrestleMania 7, right? Or 17, I'm sorry. WrestleMania 17. The Austin heel turn was the end of the Attitude Era. I disagree. Because Austin beat the crap out of Lita with a chair. A chair, Nate. A woman. Yeah. And then he got into a feud with Spike Dudley, of all people. While he was feuding with Jericho and Benoit, he beat the crap out of Spike, and then Spike called him out on Raw. And then Austin acted like he was going to do something to Spike, and then he stunned Molly. I'm like, holy crap. These guys
really
were
bringing his real life into the screen.
Oh, man.
Too much?
He was with Deborah at the time. Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, conspicuous by his absence. Of course, today is our third man, our third host, Patrick. Fortunately, couldn't be here once again, man. Had to take care of his family. No worries there. Absolutely. The real champion is not the Undisputed Champion myself or Nate, the World Wrestling Federation champion. The real champion is a champion at home. The family man. Patrick, go home and take Guile's advice and be a family man.
There you go. That's the best advice you could give him.
By all means, man, we can't wait to have you back here and discuss a little bit what we're going to discuss today and going forward. But first, dude, we had some late-breaking news. No longer late-breaking now, but, man, it just sort of came out of nowhere, it seems.
That's a metaphor for what actually happened.
Yeah. Dude, Rollins is hurt.
Again.
And the same knee. And he got hurt. We're just going to go straight into spoilers. Anybody, we want to talk about this first, because obviously this is like the big, big news story. But he got attacked by Samoa Joe after Triple H called him out. And obviously Samoa Joe was kind of being put in a spot. Him taking out Rollins in this mode here was to signify he is like Triple H's new chosen boy. He's the new Seth freaking Rollins, right? And so, but what happened, he landed wrong. I can't remember exactly where they think it happened. Joe hit him, and when he landed, he kind of landed wrong on his knee or on his leg. And then, I mean, the angle looks great. And by all means, like, it was a complete and utter accident. So it's also kind of ironic that all the Seth guys that are, like, really hard on him for hurting people, this is the second time that Seth has been derailed. So close to Mania, too. And I actually have a little bit of news about that, an update. According to Dave Meltzer, it is believed that it is a torn MCL, and that the early word is that he'll be out of action for about 8 weeks. This could make the return time for Mania possible, but it's hard to say if they would risk bringing him back before he's ready. And of course, I was thinking, like, so say they go ahead and they say, okay, it's 8 weeks, Seth will make it, he'll be there. What if they go through all the problems and all the thing of Seth trying to make a comeback to face Triple H, And then they go through all the TV time and all the promo time, and then it turns out on the day of he can't go. That's a gamble.
Yeah, it really is a gamble, but there's a couple ways you can play this, Brando, and it's great that we're starting here tonight to discuss the news that's in the WWE with Seth Rollins. I have a couple different thoughts on how you play this. One, now Triple H doesn't have to wrestle, which is okay. You can postpone the Triple H Rollins feud until SummerSlam, and it'll still be bad as fuck. Mm-hmm. And actually, him getting hurt adds some legitimacy, because it's like Triple H can go, I told Joe to take you out, so I didn't have to deal with this shit anymore. You know, obviously he's not going to say shit, but you know what I'm saying. You know, I don't have to deal with this anymore. And he did what he did what any good soldier would do, and did exactly what I told him. Took you out,
Joey.
You know, and then he pushed it.
Joey, sorry to interrupt, but Joey even kayfabed Twitter, and after Seth had tweeted a picture of his leg and said, "I wish this were all just a nightmare," and Joe tweeted at Triple H and said, "Well, I guess I delivered."
Yeah.
And so yeah. So it kind of seems like that's where they're going.
You're setting up this little foundation. Now, what do you do with Samoa Joe? He just made his big, humongous debut. Honestly, Kevin Owens. Those two should start feuding immediately. Because now you've got H's guy who was gifted the fucking Universal title, who's allowed Chris Jericho, and I know this is all storyline driven, but Chris Jericho is now kind of hijacked the Kevin Owens show and has guaranteed him be a champion, and obviously that's guaranteed that he's been a champion. But people don't hate Kevin Owens, or Jericho for that matter. They're not the ones getting booed. It's always been Roman. Why not put someone who is a great top-of-the-top elite heel in the entire industry, Samoa Joe? When he turns up the heat to 11 and he's a pissed-off badass, no one greater, in my opinion. Not in this era, anyways. Why not just have those two go at the feud for the title? Make it a big spectacle. You don't need fucking Braun or Roman or Roman and those are all things we'll get to later, but at least for the immediate with what happened with this event on Raw. Rollins and H push that shit to SummerSlam. Let it ride out for the summer while Rollins, you know, maybe gets shoved around a little bit by the authority. And he's like, well, last time I tried to stand up to the authority, they almost took me out for good. Now what do I do? And then there's a breaking point. Enough is enough. And then, you know, you can set that up again. But yeah, man, this is crazy. Seth has some really terrible luck. Or this is one of the best fabricated storylines that they go with.
Unfortunately, it's going to be a real thing turned fabricated.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to talk like with how you just kind of came up with that right now and how stuff seems to be laying out and how I see it going. I see it going completely differently.
Interesting.
But we're going to go right into the Rumble review. We started off big on that. We're going to go right into the Rumble review. Do you want me to take it or do you want to take it for the victory rundown?
Well, the results page is still loading on my iPad apparently. So here it is.
I can go, though, so that way you can find your spot. We had three pre-show matches, and Becky Lynch, Nikki Bella, and Naomi defeated Alexa Bliss, Mickey James, and Natalya. And I want to say Naomi got the pin on Alexa Bliss. Next up was Luke Gallows, Carl Anderson, challenging Cesaro and Sheamus for the Raw Tag Team Championships, and they were successful.
First titles officially in the WWE.
Yes, exactly. And maybe just a little bit too long of a wait. And it's so obvious now to me. You never really knew how long they were actually going to keep the belts. But obviously, Sheamus and Cesaro at this point are transitional champions. Nia Jax defeated Sasha Banks in a singles match. Charlotte Flair and Bayley opened up the show as Charlotte defeated Bayley for the Raw Women's Championship. She defended, of course. Next up, the next Raw match, for the Universal title, Kevin Owens defended against Roman Reigns after Braun Strowman made an appearance. Jericho was suspended in the shark cage above the ring. Neville defeated.
Never cheered for I've never cheered for Braun Strowman louder.
Neville defeated Rich Swann by submission, the Rings of Saturn, to become the new WWE Cruiserweight Champion. John Cena defeated AJ Styles to become the 16-time WWE Champion. And then the Royal Rumble match itself was won by Randy Orton after he eliminated Roman Reigns. We're definitely going to get to that. So, quick thoughts, Nick. What do you think about this show?
I think that some really great matches got left off the main card. I think that the tag champ match should have been on the main card. I feel like...
There was time for it because the four-hour mark they had, I want to say they ended right around 10:30. So with only 10 minutes, they had time for that match.
Yeah, for sure. I also feel like, I mean, the SmackDown women getting kind of hoed. Here, just go with this six-chick elimination chamber, or this six-chick
elimination chamber match.
Elimination Dude. Tag match or whatnot. You
Dude,
know?
They need to do an elimination chamber. They need to have a second chamber match with the women.
Unprecedented. That would be insane.
Woohoo!
But all I'm saying is that they kind of got buried, put first on the card. I didn't even see the match, to be quite honest, because I missed pre-show.
You know what? Of the matches, I did miss, like, two matches on this card. Maybe a match and a half, because I had to wait for Wyatt to go down to start cooking dinner. And then when I was cooking dinner, like, I made my root beer wings that I made for Mania last year. And then I made onion rings, homemade, for the first time.
Ooh, tasty.
And so, yeah, I was a little bit busy. But, no, I did see this match, and it, yeah, you know, they... They got more time than Nia Jax and Sasha got, but the Naomi did get the big win, and so this kind of sets up some others. Really, they were in a weird spot with the way they have the storylines going, where it's like they could have had some singles matches, but they decided to, you know, let's kind of save this for SmackDown and the next SmackDown pay-per-view and some of these storylines to really progress then, because... Really, Mickey just debuted like the week of, right? So let's go ahead and tag these girls up and let's go. I have no problem with it. The Raw girls definitely got a chance to shine a little bit more on their own. But, you know, they're definitely going to have a chance to bring it in Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, I fully agree. Now, kind of running down the card a little bit. No surprise, Charlotte and Bayley tore the house down. Great match.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I posted on our Facebook page, on the Journey to Wrestling Facebook page, kind of felt like some of their prior matches had been better. This was a pretty standard match. The apron spot was really cool. But
yeah.
Since there was an apron spot done just on Raw, where they didn't need to do that apron spot on Raw with Rollins and Zayn when Rollins pedigreed him on the apron.
Uh-huh.
Like, literally, you could have had Rollins just pedigree Zayn in the middle of the ring and then hit the music. And it would have, and then it would, like, pedigreeing on the apron means absolute, it means it should be over. But then Zayn won that match. And then on the Rumble, it's like, okay, guess what? It's definitely over here. So I kind of feel like the writing team or whoever was putting these matches together just did not think that one through.
Fucking Dewey Foley.
I really think like whoever was the aegis for these matches should have been paying attention to what happened on Raw. And if they did it on Raw... As much as it helps this story with saying that in that move absolutely defeated Bayley and it kind of put Bayley down just a little bit. Maybe see the Raw thing. I think maybe that was just overbooked. So, cause it definitely didn't need that. So you jumped ahead a little bit. Do you have anything to say about the tag title match at all? Or did you even see those?
I haven't seen it yet. Like I said, I missed the entire pre-show.
Entire pre-show?
The only things I did not see were those three pre-show matches, but I did know the results of those matches by the time the main card started.
Okay, I don't have much to say about the tag title match. really at all. It was a decent match. The Nia Jax, Sasha, they worked on Sasha's leg. Nia Jax got her lip busted open, so both her and Charlotte Flair were kind of bleeding from the mouth. They kind of... Okay, so Nia Jax is supposed to be this monster, right? That's how they're booking her.
Okay.
And what I'm going to say here, it's constructive criticism. I'm not putting down Nia for this. I know we like to run a certain couple of guys that we don't like through the mud on this show.
Yeah, well.
And I know that, like, we, you know, we may not all be fans of Nia, but I'm just going to offer constructive criticism for Nia because she's never going to listen to this show, but I want her to know that I don't dislike her. I don't dislike her at all. And in fact, me being kind of a, like, I actually like that there's a bigger woman in wrestling that isn't being portrayed to be, you know, ugly, isn't being portrayed to be Bertha Faye from old school WWF pre-Attitude Era days, like in the New Generation days. You know, she's just a big, curvy Samoan girl, and who has a great ass, by the way. I'm just saying. But okay.
What up?
Hey, man.
You know,
gotta get.
I think there's only one thing with Nia Jax that I don't like, and it's her. I don't know how to word this. She's never believably angry, and that bothers me.
Maybe you have a point, because kind of what I'm saying here is she's supposed to be this monster heel, and obviously with her stature, with her size compared to the other women. Obviously, she'd be throwing these girls around like ragdolls because she looks like she should be a monster. What I'm going to say is that when Sasha was bringing it to her, right? The way Nia, she, and I know this, she didn't mean to do it, but she put her hands up instinctively like, oh no, you're hitting me in the face. You know, like you, like you saw the panic for a second in her eyes, like, oh crap, I'm going to get hit for real. Whereas, you know, Nia Jax at this point shouldn't be selling shit for anybody. Like, she needs to be getting backed up and then knock her down. Like as you said, never believably mad. She, for like, I saw fear in her eyes where she's supposed to be a monster. It's almost like if you would see Bam Bam Bigelow, just to throw a kind of a bigger guy name out there. He's getting knocked back into a corner. He's not going to look, oh my God, I'm getting knocked back in a corner. He's not going to throw his hands up like, oh my God. He's going to get knocked back and he's going to sell. And then, but he's not going to look like he's not going to look like he's not that big, vicious heel guy. If what I'm saying, and you know, maybe I'm not using the right words, but I just kind of feel like that takes away from the demeanor. She's not supposed to be afraid of anybody. And she's supposed to be this tough bitch. Oh, and now we have my son coming in to say hi. Hi. Really? Are you going to bed? Mm-hmm. Hi.
Oh.
It's cold back here. It's a little chilly back here, I know. Yeah. How you doing, dude?
I'm pulling it under.
Do you want to say hi to the listeners? Say hi. Say hi. You said it a minute ago, say hi.
Hi.
Here I was just complaining about how Nia Jax isn't being enough of a heel and tough enough. And here you come in and you zap all the tough right out of this podcast.
With your cuteness. A big old softy.
Yeah, with your cuteness. I love you, dude. You have a good night, okay? You want... Hey, do you want to give me a hug?
He's telling me bye.
He's telling you bye? He's going to stay back here on the show? I'm just going to stay back here and co-host. Do you have stuff to say about wrestling? Yeah, do you? Are you going to grab my microphone? You can't do that. Okay, Bubba. I got to get on with my show so we can move on. Because we need to talk about the Royal Rumble. We haven't even got there yet. We're on the first match. We're still in the pre-show. Good night, Bubba. I love you. Mwah. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, dude. Anyway, where was I?
Welcome back. You were talking about how Nia Jax is not imposing enough as a monster, and she shouldn't be selling shit.
No, dude, she shouldn't be selling anything for anybody right now. And I just kind of feel like I know she didn't mean to. And obviously, you know, she's still, I hate to use the term green, but she is still pretty new. And she still has a long way to go in her career. But I just kind of think that I kind of hope that maybe she, going forward, thinks about that. Or, you know, wrestling is all about no wasted motion. It's all about presence. It's all about when you walk through that curtain, you are this character. It has to become every little movement that you do means something. And so I noticed that. And while she was trying to be mean later on in the match, and I'm like, I just saw you panic for a second. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Nia Jax should be panicking to Sasha Banks right now at all. But that's just kind of my two cents. I really do hope the best for her. And I think that she, with time, can be, you know, a dominant woman in the division and, you know, can be someone to compete against. I mean, I would love to see her and Charlotte, be honest with you, because I think, honestly, I think Charlotte Flair is one of the best all-around wrestlers on the entire roster, not male or female. I think she's really stepped up her game, even from when she just joined the roster last year or the year before.
Well, and she's been floating in the roster in that year because she's been a part of the main roster but also floating down and doing NXT work all the while.
Wait, which one are you talking about?
Are you talking about Nia still?
I said Charlotte is in my opinion. Charlotte Flair is, in my opinion, one of the greatest wrestlers in any division in the company right now. And I feel like she's improved since, you know, even when she came up to the main roster. It's almost like she's now grasped the presence of it all. You know, she has, you know, because she was always really good in the ring, and now it's like she's good in the ring, and then her presence and her character, it's there. It's like it's almost like she spent the last year fine-tuning everything, and it's coming together for her really well.
Ditching Rick was her biggest plus. I'm not saying that Ric Flair was bad for Charlotte Flair. I don't want anybody to think that, because it was not only a beautiful thing that they could even have that opportunity together.
Yeah.
But I think divisively it set her apart, as she's really kind of evil and maniacal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you're, I mean, look at some of the greatest heel champions in history. They were divisive in that regard, as, you know, they were believably pissed off at everything. They believably were against everybody. It seemed deep down that no one wanted to work with, you know, specific legendary heels in the day. Behind the scenes, obviously, super nice people. You know, Charlotte and Sasha and Bayley and all of them are real friends. They're real friends. They came up together. But on screen, her intensity, I think, evolved when she told Rick to get lost.
Now, see, like, I see it as, like, this character that she's kind of portraying now. She is the queen. She's the top and be-all, end-all. And much like I think back to her dad, he was the man, right? He was the champion. He was the man. No one bigger than him. You're going to have the ride. If you're going to ride with me, you better be ready to go 60 minutes. And you better be ready to lose, because that's what you're going to do. You don't have as much swagger as me. You're not as good as me. You don't have as much money as me. You don't have as much nice things as I do. That was who Ric Flair was. He was above everybody else. And Charlotte's sort of taking that and almost kind of like she's wrestling royalty. That's her character. And so the queen persona really fits with her. Because really, it's just almost like an adaptation of what her dad was, in a way. He was more about material things, and she's talking about how, like, it's her legacy. But it definitely has, like, taken her a good notch above every other woman on the roster as far as presence. And this is something that between her, Sasha, being, in my opinion, the probably two best in the women's division overall, they're both on Raw, and it kind of sucks because it really kind of shows, like, the SmackDown girls, no offense to the girls over there at all, they're all good. But I feel like their division is kind of lackluster because both of the big heavy hitters are over on one show. And so, while if you had Sasha over there, she could be the heel. Well, when she's pulling the weight over there, and then you had Charlotte over there, you know, keeping them both on Raw and having, and then the rumor that they're going to turn Sasha heel later on. I hope that they do another draft and they kind of split those two up, kind of even out.
They are doing a draft, though.
Yeah, and we might have to talk about that a little bit closer when that comes. Because I don't really think it has a place here on this show just yet. Maybe later when we talk about stuff. But I don't know if they're going to do it in the summer like they did last year. Or I heard rumor May or like early June. But moving on, buddy. What do you think about Owens and Reigns?
They need to put a pin on this feud. It doesn't benefit Roman. I mean, Roman's in a really interesting predicament now because they have heaped on the fan hate, and we'll dive into this a lot later on. But it's kind of starts here. You've got Roman going into this match. We had discussed this, on the previous Journey into Wrestling. Who wins this match? How does it actually go? How do you book this match? Do you give it to Kevin Owens and let him hold the title a little bit longer? Do you give it to Roman Reigns and then start that bullshit push with the whole Braun Strowman rumor? So, you kind of fuck up a little bit, WWE, because you have now offered us two shark cage matches in under a year.
Again, agents that don't watch their own show, I don't think.
NXT just had a shark cage match. Why are we doing this?
I know. It's really weird.
It's to sell toys. It's to sell fucking toys, Brando.
Oh, there it is. Gotta be.
I mean, that's the only reason I can come up with, you know?
On the next WWE 2K game, are they going to have a shark cage match? It's just so pointless.
And even if they do, so what the fuck is the point? You're up above the ring, so? And that's another thing. Going into the shark cage match, I thought to myself, it's an open shark cage. You can drop anything from up there.
That's the old gimmick.
I mean, Jericho could have his pockets lined with gold and just drop gold during the whole match. It doesn't matter, you know?
He wore the belt. He wore the U.S. belt.
He did. I thought he was going to drop that too, for sure. But then it's the whole, oh, well, it's no disqualification. So you suspended Jericho in a thing to prevent him from getting involved. But then you made it no DQ, pretty much saying it's open season for anyone to get involved. Okay.
Yeah.
I still don't get it, but okay. I'll stick around. Match is decent. A lot of good spots.
Chair spot.
Not what's up?
The mountain of chair spot.
Yeah, okay, which I thought was a million-dollar baby moment for Kevin Owens. Because it looked like the back of his neck hit one of the tops of those chairs. And I thought, he fucking just died on screen. I just watched that dude die on screen, you know? To kind of get back into it, overall, the match was just kind of, you know, eh. It wasn't amazing. It wasn't their best match. It wasn't their worst match. But, as I said earlier, there's a moment where I'm, again, like, oh, fuck, they're going to give this title to Roman Reigns. What are they planning? What's the point here? And Braun Strowman comes in and just devastates. Brando, what was going through your mind during kind of the end of this match?
Strowman's winning the Rumble. And that Reigns is going to beat Owens at Fastlane, and we're getting Roman Strowman Universal title.
Yeah, Roman Strowman 2017, right?
Oh, man. I was like, yay. Oh, damn it.
Yay, boo.
Oh, man. It hit me, and I was like, well, looks like Cena's winning tonight.
And we can touch on that, too. I mean, in some points here, you know, getting on what happened with the Cena-AJ match. But Kevin Owens squeaks by, and with everything that happened, I literally think the Universal title is clouded right now. There's no clear picture for what happens with the Universal title moving outside of Mania. there's one thing I could possibly see them doing, maybe.
Well, we'll come back to that because I have an idea of what they're going to do.
Okay.
Neville defeated Rich Swann. I missed most of this match. I missed some of the Owens and Reigns. I was walking back and forth to the kitchen. I was watching it, and I was mainly, honestly, I just listened to a lot of it. Neville and Rich Swann, I missed most of this match. I was concentrating on cooking. So I went back, and you know, Neville not doing – he's doing almost kind of like his own take of like the anti-cruiserweight. You know, he's like, he's not flying around because obviously flying around as a heel, he gets you cheered. He's trying to really get booed and be – the king of the cruiserweights, and he's won with submission. So I'm really happy that he won, even though it almost kind of seems like they don't have a real direction. And maybe now they do with Neville, because it seems like they've had, okay, you have it. Okay, you have the title. Okay, now Rich has it. And it's like, now that they actually have a real heel other than Brian Kendrick for the cruiserweights, it's like, okay, let's put the belt on Neville and have these guys chase him and have them do all these flying stuff and have Neville just catch him and land, and then he straps on a submission and beats him up. I'm okay with that. And who knew Neville could talk this good? Man, his promos have been really good lately, and I'm very happy, and it makes another reason why you need to watch 205 Live. And then, of course, there's the news story I heard about them when Austin Aries heals up, he's going to 205 Live in the cruiserweight division. So,
well, and he's been teasing that, like I said, on commentary throughout. Yeah. So that's not a super surprise. It's awesome.
Oh yeah.
205 Live seems like it's going to be stacked.
And there's even a rumor that they might be, this is a rumor. This is like the big grain of salt. That they might be trying to get Rey Mysterio to come back, not even to just be on the main card, but to be a guy for 205 Live and really get the cruiserweight division going, which would be interesting. He's a legend, and so kind of it seems weird just to bring him back just to do that. But in an era where we have like so many guys that can vie for a top spot, clouding Mysterio up in that just to have him not do much, he could really. It's almost like. They said they weren't going to put Neville in 205 Live or with the cruiserweights. And I'm like, why? He's built for that. And you're not, you have no plans for him. Like literally they're like, no, he's not going to do that. Then what are you going to do? I don't know. Well, if he's not going to hold the US title and he's just going to be floating around, why not put him in the cruiserweight division and he can be a boss down there and he can really do something with it and mean something.
Yeah, and then whenever he's ready to be bored with that or whenever they want to switch direction, just have him like appear on the main roster and kick somebody's ass.
Exactly. Just have him switch gears and have him go for the US title or feud with somebody else. I think the WWE is taking this cruiserweight idea and they're like being so tunnel visioned with it where they're like, you know, only cruiserweights can wrestle other cruiserweights. And it's almost like I think back to one of the good things few things that WCW did right and is like they highlighted their cruiserweights without overbranding it. And I kind of feel like with the cruiserweights, I know they're doing the 205 Live thing, but I kind of feel like sometimes it's just overbranded. And it's like, oh, here are the cruiserweights fighting the only other cruiserweights in the division. And it's like you never see them face anybody else. Like,
and there's not enough of a roster in 205 Live to sustain that. We're going to have 205 Live tag champs. I mean, what are we going to do? 205 Live women's division? That's a whole different ballpark. I mean, I think that they're too separate. 205 Live doesn't feel like it's actually WWE programming, and I think that's where it's lacking.
I'll be honest with you. I think they need to just stack the cruiserweights onto SmackDown. I know they're supposed to be a Raw thing, but since they filmed 205 Live anyway, just put them on SmackDown. They have their own little hour. In fact, you know what? They're having problems getting people to stay to watch 205 Live. Just have it air before SmackDown at like 6:00 Eastern. And it's like, have it air before SmackDown, and then they can either have a big match there or they can promote saying, hey, guess what? On SmackDown over on the USA Network, Neville's going to defend the Cruiserweight title against, you know, so-and-so. So they can always, like, set something up on there for you for them for you to want to tune over to SmackDown. John Cena defeated AJ Styles and made history, becoming only the only second person, according to WWE's official terms, to be a 16-time World Heavyweight Champion. I say that because WWE only recognizes 16 of Ric Flair's supposed, like, 20 world titles, depending on how you want to count that. So, John Cena now breathes rarefied air in a match that I said to you was as good, if not better, than the SummerSlam match. Instant first match of the WWE to be, in my opinion, match of the year contender for our awards show later on this year. This match is going to be it's going to be nominated by me for sure.
I mean, I'm nominating it too, and we're not even to the end of the year.
Yeah.
But it was such a classic match. I think Cena said it best on SmackDown. AJ Styles brings the absolute best out of John Cena. And I mean, AJ does that with pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
But with Cena, it was like seeing him in a different gear. And I don't know. I'm in this weird stage now where I'm like, you know, I kind of respect Cena. He's been around for a long time. And, you know, I don't give a fuck that he won 16 titles or whatever, because, you know, a lot of that's bizarre backstage politics. But, you know, I was watching a podcast interview with Shawn Michaels, and he said, hey, who should we be really upset at? Do we be upset at John Cena for asking questions that Vince McMahon ultimately said yes to? Or should we be mad at Vince McMahon for being the one who said yes when more times than not Vince McMahon has been known to say no to people? Whose fault is that really? Is it John's fault that Vince said yes? Not really. That's on Vince, you know? And I think perspective-wise, it's like, you know, that's true. They pushed Cena. And through all of that, he has gained and lost respect. There have been matches throughout his career that he's won and or lost that have been great matches. You can't take that away from him ever. But I think now he's kind of evolving into a legitimately seasoned, you know, almost legend. He's, him and Randy are both kind of getting close to that Austin Rock legendary status before they left, you know. And not to say that Cena's going to leave right away or anything, but, you know, let's be real.
Cena's had a longer reign on top than almost anybody. You can, other than like Bruno having the championship for a combined 12 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, Cena's been on like top for 12 years. I mean, he has always been champion, but I had zero problems. I've always respected him, even when I have not been a fan of his character, and grown tired of him when he's constantly, from like probably 2007 to 2012, where he's just constantly shoved down your throat for like 5 years there. I was just really tired of him and suffered through it. And a man, as you said, with AJ, and there's a few other people, but man, you get him in there with the right dance partner, and he puts it up to a different gear. You know, it's almost like, it's like Cena, they always say Cena can't wrestle. He can wrestle. He just, sometimes it's almost like he needs to be stepped up. You know, it's almost, because, I mean, when you're on top and when you're wrestling day in, day out, it can be very easy to not realize that maybe you're phoning it in, just going through the motions. Yeah. And when you get in there and you get a guy like AJ, and honestly, I feel like Punk even brought this out in Cena too, and Edge did.
Definitely Edge.
Oh, yeah. But you bring Cena out to this new level of where he is in it. He's in it. He's intense. And I think AJ Styles, I mean, Cena's been around long enough. Unlike where you look at Austin and you say, what was his greatest feud? And it's like, well, he's had a couple. There's McMahon and there's Rock. And okay, he had a few other smaller ones with like guys like Angle and Triple H. But then it's like, you ask Cena, for Cena, what's his greatest rival? And it's like, well, there was Edge, there's Randy Orton, there's Punk, and now I'm adding Styles to that list. Because even though there's only been three singles matches, they have honestly, in my opinion, been better than any of the other matches that any of the other guys have had. I mean, like, 10 years ago, this is a dream match.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's here, and it is as good as it would have been back then. It is unreal. And, you know, AJ dropped it. Cena got his win back. And it, I love how when AJ hypes up for these big matches, like gets in this. And no, even though he's the heel, he lost. And who in that crowd is going to look at him and hate AJ Styles after this?
None.
You know, it's like, unless you just really don't like his character, but like, God, man, they brought it. And they told a great story. Just a great story. And I'm so happy. And I'm happy for John. And there's a picture of Ric Flair and John backstage with John holding the belt, right? Mm-hmm. And you can just tell Ric had been crying. You know, Ric loves John. And he's a cheerleader for John. And he wasn't a guy that says, no, you can't touch my record. He goes, yes, break my record. That's awesome. You know, records in wrestling are meant to be broken, you know, just like streaks are made to end, and how, like, you know, sales numbers and attendance numbers are meant to be broken. It's all going to happen at some point. We exist in a business where nothing is forever. It's always on to the next thing. And so now, buddy, we're going to look at the Rumble. And the Rumble match went an hour and 2 minutes. And I got to say, it was a decent Rumble with a few really good moments. But altogether, it was a little bit of a letdown as far as surprise entrance. And, you know, we're just going to kind of go through this. Number one, buddy. Number one was Big Cass. So, of course, we got a Enzo and Big Cass promo to start this thing off. And
good way to start off the Rumble, I thought.
Oh, dude, I love these guys. They're so entertaining. They make me laugh every time. Number two is Chris Jericho. And he lasted the longest out of anybody in this Rumble. And he went...
He also should have won.
I kind of agree. Now, he lasted an hour and 13 seconds and only eliminated two people. Chris Jericho, it cracked me up because he spent more time on the outside than he did inside. And
genius heel.
Oh, well, not even that. It was just like, it would be so funny because he would get hit and then get like knocked out and just lay out. And then by the time he would come back, he'd get hit again and knocked out again. So like, I just kept laughing at it because it's like anytime he would just get back up and get in there, he would get hit hard, and then he would just go sell. And like, okay. It's almost like later on, The Miz's job was to just take people's finishers later on. It's like, that's all he did. He just kept getting hit.
Yeah, he's the king of taking finishers for sure.
Number three, Kalisto. Honestly, I like Kalisto, but man, I don't know. I just kind of feel like he was fodder in this for one of the monsters. Number four, Mojo Rawley. Again, it's like he earned his spot on SmackDown. It's like, you know, Mojo's not going to win. But I mean, not every one of the 30 men are a guaranteed win, you know. You can't put all 30 guys in there who could win the match and have it be believable. That's way too many potential top guys. Number five, Jack Gallagher. And I want to say he's the only real cruiserweight in this. And
James Ellsworth.
Okay. He's not part of the division, but he had some cool spots with his umbrella, and he was the first eliminated by...
Like a lawn dart.
Yeah, by Mark Henry. And he kind of went out with his with his umbrella, and I was so hoping that he would just slowly just coast down.
Mary Poppins style. Yeah. I thought that too.
And of course, you know, gravity doesn't work like that. But next out, number six, was Mark Henry. Got a big pop. Big Texas, you know, obviously big Texas guy. Big pop for Mark. I want to say he was a surprise entrant. I don't think he had been announced. So, I mean, it's as far as that goes, it's like...
he's one of the very few surprise entrants we might want to mention.
Yes, very few surprise entrants where he wasn't announced. Of course, people are thinking surprise entrants. They're thinking of certain people who don't make an appearance here. Samoa Joe, looking at you. But obviously, for the crowd you're in, Mark Henry, big strong guy, and obviously to help get Braun over. Speaking of Braun, he's next. Braun Strowman, number 7. He lasts 13 minutes and has seven eliminations. I want to say he has the most. Yes, he does. He had the most eliminations, and he pretty much ran through Kalisto, Big Cass, Mojo Rawley, Mark Henry. Number 8 was revealed earlier on in the show in a backstage segment. That was Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn lasted 47 minutes and 12 seconds. He was in there for a while. Of course,
was hoping they were going to fuck around and let him win it, but of course that didn't happen.
No. Of course not. He's not quite at that level yet as far as even being like ready for that big Mania level push. I feel like Sami, if he keeps going on his trajectory and he doesn't piss anybody off and he can keep going, maybe next year he'd be at that level. But number 9 was the Big Show. And of course, he's in there to have his big showdown with Braun Strowman. And Big Show lasted 1 minute 42 seconds, getting eliminated by Braun Strowman. Number 10. Ty Dillinger.
I get the gimmick. But wait till next year.
He's super over. He is super over, and the big rumor was that they might put him in, and the crowd popped for him really loud. So he was one of the other surprise entrants for this as well. Came out, got some stuff in. 0 eliminations for him. He was in there for about 5 minutes. Up next, James Ellsworth, and Braun Strowman is the only one standing. And of course, he's running out, and then he doesn't want to get in the ring. And he stands there so long that Dean Ambrose comes out next at number 12. And then he acts like he's going to team up with Ellsworth, and they're both going to take on Strowman. And then Ellsworth goes charging in, and Ambrose just kind of hangs back all like, all cool hand Luke. Like, it was so hilarious, man.
That was a genius spot.
And then Ellsworth lasted. He was the quickest elimination at 15 seconds. That bump that he took.
Ouch.
Oh, dude, that hurt my shoulder looking at it. Number 13, Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin lasted over a half hour. And, anybody who listens to Journey to Wrestling knows that none of the hosts really hold him in high favor.
We don't like him.
No, we don't like him. However, he actually made me cheer for him in this match.
Because he eliminated Strowman.
He eliminated Braun Strowman. As Zayn was able to hit the Aluva kick and Baron sent him flying. That was a hell of a hit from Baron Corbin. And that was pretty much, like, he was in it for a long time, but that was like his biggest high spot. And Corbin kind of didn't do much after that. That's Corbin's only elimination was with Strowman. And, when I watched him in there, it kind of seems like he is improving in the ring. Like, I'm not really seeing too many flaws in his game in the ring. I mean, of course, this is the Rumble, so a lot of stuff going on. You're not staring at him. You're not, seeing one-on-one matches. I mean, of course, he still has a personality of a log.
I was going to say a stump.
That could be. I mean...
Slap.
I mean, basically, if you rolled that log over and found a tiny stick and discovered that stick had a child, or that log had a child, and that was a stick. Have you seen that at all, Nate?
Uh-uh.
You haven't seen Seagulls Stop It Now from Bad Lip Reading?
Nope.
After we're done with this, you are watching that, because you're going to get a kick out of it. Off air.
Sweet.
All right, sweet. So up next, number 14, Kofi Kingston. What do you think of his spot this year?
Dangerous. It wasn't as cool as it could have been.
Yep.
Thought they were going to do more, and they didn't.
No, they kind of focused more on having the entire group in there. And that's fine. I kind of think Kofi's spot would have been better if they'd have caught it better, because it looked like he was just hanging on like by like his fingernails. It looked painful. He kind of hit it with his chest. I thought he smacked his face on it. But number 15 was The Miz. And The Miz comes out, and he lasts for about a half hour as well. Was in there for quite some time.
Eliminates zero people.
Indeed. You know, a lot of people had zero eliminations. 16 was Sheamus. And 17 was Big E. Now, did you notice, I sent the picture, maybe, that a lot of the bigger guys, they had carts.
Didn't see that on air.
No, because they didn't film it at all. Like, they just totally cut that. Where some of the bigger guys, they would, like, walk down the ramp, and then they would get on this, the camera would cut, and then they would get on, like, this little scooter, and they would ride them to the ring, and they'd get off, and they start walking in the ring, and the camera would come back on them as they were walking in the ring. Very well cleverly hidden. I mean, obviously the live crowd saw it. They didn't really give a crap. So, I mean, they only did it for like, some of the bigger guys, and so that way they didn't have to run and really blow themselves up.
Show Big E.
I want to say
Bray. Mark Henry?
Maybe and Mark. Bray. Yeah, and Bray got it. And maybe Strowman got it too.
I mean, it wasn't like, what was that, WrestleMania 7? Longest entrance ramp ever?
17?
Or was that 6?
Wait, hold on. The longest entrance ramp I've ever seen is WrestleMania 19.
It was 19, correct.
Where, like, it was so long, dude. Like, I remember, like, it turned.
Yeah, Taker, like, rode for a solid 45 seconds on his motorcycle to the ring.
And then, I think WrestleMania 8 was, I think that one turned too. Like, I always thought it would be hilarious to have, like, an entrance aisle that just kind of turned and went all over the place and kind of, like, circled around the arena. Because I always thought it'd be hilarious for the Ultimate Warrior to have to do that, and he'd be so tired by the time he'd just running in circles.
He'd be like,
he was already blown up by the time he got to the ring. Up next, number 18, Rusev. Rusev last year got eliminated right away. He was like number 2. And I don't really remember much of what Rusev did in this, to be honest with you.
Got eliminated by Goldberg is all I think I can remember. I don't think he eliminated anybody.
Nope.
And I know he lasted a long time, but I think that was a lot of the weird... Let's talk about how that was very weird with this match. Not just to run down, like, the overall competitors, but, like, there were a lot of these, like, dream moments, if you will. You know, Braun Strowman staring down Mark Henry, Lesnar Goldberg, Goldberg Taker, you know, some of these bigger dudes having these stare downs, and it took a lot of time away from the match.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because it would be like, here's this person's entrance. Here's how long it's going to take them. Here's this, you know, and then there's the buildup. And maybe this one person who just entered eliminates 6 people, but I'm not one of the 6, so I'm just going to sit back for the next 10 minutes, you know?
Yeah. Where was I at? Cesaro's next. And Cesaro comes out up next after that. Number 20, Xavier Woods. All of the New Day's in there. And Cesaro and Sheamus working together. They eliminate all 3 members of the New Day at the same time.
Interesting bump there. But I don't hate it. It kind of keeps the feud between those 2 teams going.
Yeah.
Now if New Day can get their name back into, and I'm sure they will, into the tag title picture against Gallows and Anderson, they can take the titles off Gallows and Anderson, then you've got Cesaro and Sheamus saying, well, we kicked your guys' ass at the Rumble. How about you give us a shot? Or, hell, do a triple threat tag match. We haven't seen that in a while. For the titles, mind you.
After eliminating those guys, Sheamus tried to turn on Cesaro, and then Chris Jericho dumped them both out. And they almost fought in the aisleway, or like on the ringside. Did you notice that when they got eliminated, they weren't walking back up the ramp? They were walking, like, into the crowd?
I didn't notice that, actually.
They had, like, a little section of the barricade. I want to say it was probably by the timekeeper.
Okay.
And they were walking back that way.
Weird.
Yeah, it was different. Up next, 21, Bray Wyatt. He lasts a while in there as well. Number 22, the probably one of the more, entrances, Apollo Crews.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense for me.
Yeah, that was just like, you really going to put Apollo in there? You couldn't find Hacksaw hanging around somewhere? I mean, that would have got a bigger pop. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't hate Apollo Crews, but they just haven't done much with him. And like, it just seems like they called him up way too soon. Number 23, Randy Orton. He wins the damn thing, by the way. Spoiler alert. Up next.
Better than the other option.
Yeah. We'll get there. Number 24, Dolph Ziggler. Heel now, because heel Ziggler. And I like him better as a heel, to be honest with you. But,
yeah.
You know, I think he deserves to be here as much as anybody else. 25, Luke Harper comes out, goes right after Randy and Wyatt, and continues that little thing, and tries to hit Wyatt with the Sister Abigail.
Into an RKO.
Yeah, a lot of RKOs in this.
Yeah.
Randy went RKO crazy when he got in there. After Harper was Brock Lesnar, and he's number 26. We're at 26, and we still have, like, the big three to go that were in this. Where Lesnar comes out and pretty much just destroys, dominates everybody. He's waiting for somebody to come out. And that's number 27, and that's not Goldberg. No. Not Samoa Joe. No. Not The Undertaker. No. Enzo Amore.
Another head scratcher, Brando.
You know what?
I don't hate it. I love Enzo, but I don't think he had a place in this.
You know what? He got a pop when he came back out, and I loved how he was so fired up. Like, Enzo knows he's not going to beat Brock Lesnar, but Enzo is such a little firecracker that, you know what? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do what nobody thinks I can do. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to beat Brock Lesnar. And then he goes in there and just gets his head taken off and thrown out.
18 seconds, lightning fast.
Dude, it was funny, and it was entertaining. So I can't really, like, you know, talk too bad about it. Number 28, Goldberg. Big pop for Goldberg. Man, these big guys that they really sold the pay-per-view on weren't in the ring a whole lot. Goldberg comes out, and it's one-on-one Brock Lesnar. Here we go, man. Here we go. It's party time. And he spears him and throws him right out. And you're like, again. The crowd went nuts again. And you know, I wasn't expecting it. And maybe that's one reason why they did it, because they're like, no one's going to expect him to do it again. But the awesome thing is that, you know, he threw him out, so he eliminated Lesnar. But Lesnar's looking up at him. See, I thought Lesnar was going to get back in there.
Me too.
You know, but honestly, I like the story that they're telling with this. Because Lesnar, since he's come back to the WWE, since going to the UFC, has been unstoppable. There's been, like, he's lost to Cena. Okay. But then he dominated Cena. He lost to Triple H. But then he won that series of matches. He's
lost Orton.
Yeah, he crushed Orton. He lost, in quotations, to The Undertaker, but won that series of matches. So it's like, nobody has had the kind of, like, success against Lesnar than Goldberg has, and it's this guy that beat him, like, 10 years ago. And it's like, now it's like this thing that he can't shake. Like, Goldberg has his number. And it's got to, like, as a story, that's so awesome, because now Lesnar was this unstoppable monster, and now you're looking at it, and he's scratching his head going, what the fuck do I got to do? How is this? And it's almost kind of like how, like Ivan Drago from Rocky IV, the unstoppable monster gets toppled, right?
Yeah.
But it's in 10 seconds. And or in a minute 26, and it's like happened again, and it's like
And it, you can call it flukes, but then it's like, what's Lesnar got to do? Lesnar's got to come back and beat him at some point. So up next, Goldberg's, he hit some spears. He hits a jackhammer on Sami Zayn. I bet he was marking out pretty big for that. He has some eliminations. I want to say he eliminated Rusev,
Harper, and Lesnar.
And then the Undertaker comes out. And Undertaker doesn't have to ride on a cart because he just teleports to the ring.
Of course.
Doesn't make sense if anybody else. Like, can you imagine if, like, the music hit and then, like the lights went out and you're like, wait a minute. Wait, like, where's Sami Zayn? And Sami Zayn just... Like in the ring. Like, wait a minute, what?
How did you get there? I don't know.
Whoa!
Here's an interesting thing, Brando. I want to bring this up real quick. That was good, by the way. Do you think Goldberg wasn't supposed to get eliminated? Have you rewatched that yet?
No, I haven't rewatched it. But
he looks like he fucked up. He's holding onto the ropes before he gets eliminated, and it looks like one of his hands unintentionally slips, and the fear in his eyes is like, I fucked up. This is not what the plan was. Part of me thinks he was supposed to win the Rumble, take the title before going to Mania, and then Lesnar and him were going to have a match for the title. That's what I feel like they were going to have happen. If that, what I believe is a slip-up that looks like he wasn't supposed to win, or like he looks like he was supposed to win and he fucked up, legitimately, and they had to change the plan on the fly. If that's not the case and that was never written into it, well, then he did a good job selling me. He really made me believe it. But it looks like he did not mean to do that.
Well, he sold you because he was never supposed to win. The morning of the Rumble, the betting odds online heavily favored Orton. And I was thinking, oh, Orton's going to win, but how does that make any sense? It's like, the rumors are sort of flying about matches for Mania. Like, okay, so I guess it's how they're getting there. But then number 30 made me, like, second-guess everything.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure my gut reaction was, oh, God damn it. And that was Roman Reigns. And
in this one moment, Brando, I realized that the WWE, as good as the SmackDown Live, Raw brand split and all this change that we've been a part of the now era, it reminded me that they still make really fucking stupid decisions, and in my personal opinion, this is maybe one of the worst booked Rumbles in the history of the Rumble.
Well, no, I actually think the one where Roman won was the worst booked of all time.
Well, that is the worst, but this one is right up there.
Okay, So check this out, and I'm just going to go ahead and talk about it now, even though we got something else to talk about after this. All right, so I read something from Dave Meltzer today. Why was Roman in the Rumble? Because obviously he got booed out of the building. He totally took the gas out of the crowd for a minute. And
also eliminated The Undertaker.
We're getting there. There are two reasons, according to Dave Meltzer, why Roman Reigns was in the Royal Rumble. The first reason was to start the build for Reigns versus Undertaker at WrestleMania. The other reason is that despite Roman Reigns being a babyface and Orton being a heel, the WWE wanted Orton to get the biggest face possible reaction. And the idea is that Orton eliminating Reigns last would accomplish that. They wanted the place to go nuts when Orton won. So,
well, succeed.
Well, we'll see. Okay, so that tells you something. It's like, we were scratching our heads. Why put Roman in this match? They're going to boo him. And if he wins, they're going to boo him. So obviously, they knew enough not to let him win. But it seems like they knew that if they sent him out there, he would get booed. And they knew that if they wanted Orton to win, having Orton eliminate Ziggler would have been like, well, I guess, okay. But teasing the fans, almost like prodding them, going, we're going to make Roman win. And everyone's like, no, 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 no. Oh, yeah. And then that got Orton the pop. So apparently somebody is at least aware of how the fans react and use that to get the reaction they wanted. Then, as you said, he eliminated The Undertaker and then told The Undertaker, this is my yard now.
Turn the heat up to 11.
And then proceeded to turn the, you know, turn his fire up even after the match that he was in, eliminate Bray Wyatt. Seemed like he was going to hit Roman with their Roman's going to hit Orton with the spear, and then he got caught with an epic RKO that lit that crowd on fire. And then he eliminated Roman Reigns to win his second. He's the only, I want to say that they said he's the seventh person to win more than one Royal Rumble. So really quickly, out of five, what do you rate it? Since we do five, what do you rate it?
Okay. So just to real quick run down the important parts of the main card, love Bayley Charlotte. Didn't hate the Roman match with Owens. Didn't hate the Neville match. Loved the John Cena match. Didn't really get down with the Rumble. There are a lot of things here, a lot of different holes that I would have filled differently, a lot of different ways I would have played things. This is almost, I mean, when you look at this, the eliminations versus who they were eliminated by versus how long they lasted, all the different, like, stats from the Rumble. When you look at this, I just see, it's like a kid said, this is how it's going to go. Well, how about, you know, all three members of the New Day get eliminated at the same time? How about, you know, there's funny spots for little guys like Enzo and funny spots for people like Kalisto and Jack Gallagher who shouldn't have been in the match? You know, bringing Roman Reigns into the match at all. I get your idea, but that didn't do it right. Mojo Rawley, another name that probably shouldn't have been in there. I like Ty Dillinger at 10. The only problem is I would have waited a year. If you're not going to bring him immediately to the main roster, if he didn't debut the next night on Raw or SmackDown, what was the point of putting him in the Rumble? Just temporary, you know, a temporary little rub? It didn't do him anything. It did not do Ty Dillinger any good to be in that match just to get eliminated by Braun Strowman. But to kind of overall, what did I think of this? I'm going to say like a solid 3.5. Maybe 3.25 if we're being real honest. What about you?
I give it 3 3/4.
Okay.
I thought the Rumble match was decent. I thought the best match of the night was Cena Styles. The Roman Owens match was good, a good brawl. The women's title match was again decent, good enough. And the Cruiserweight match I missed, so for most of, so I can't rate that as part of my rating. So, I mean, overall I thought the show was good, and I didn't really have that many nitpicks. I was really scratching my head of why Joe didn't debut, but then I realized they had something different planned for him.
Which, after seeing Raw, yeah, okay, makes sense that you didn't.
Exactly. I mean, you're putting him right into a big match situation and plugging him right into like one of the main feuds that's going to be involved for Mania. And obviously your plans aren't to have him in the title picture right yet. That can, honestly, I mean, with what we're looking at, Joe could be a champion by the end of the year.
Totally. But, now, real quick, before we get done with this Rumble, I want to bring up a little thought to you. But did you finish that thought? I don't want to have cut you off.
I was just going to say, like, the Ty Dillinger thing didn't bother me at all. It's very similar to, how Sammy came in and didn't debut right away. It was sort of like just something for the fans. That was the surprise entrant, like, because it doesn't make sense to have Nakamura in there because they're selling an injury. Bobby Roode had his moment, crowning moment was becoming champion. So why plug this in there to try and overshadow it? That doesn't make sense. And who else from there is like, if you're not going to do Joe, then it's like, well, I guess the most over guy in NXT besides Nakamura and Roode would be Ty Dillinger. So go for it. And I'm okay with it. Obviously, Finn wasn't cleared to compete. Otherwise, I was wondering where he was. I do think that if he'd have been cleared, he would have been in it. And maybe have even changed their opinion on who would win, depending on what they're going to do with Finn for the Rumble. But go ahead and get on with what you got to say before we start sort of tying up. What's sort of the plan, the rumors on the plans, and then we'll kind of shape it back into, after hearing this stuff, where we think things are going to go.
Okay, so all I want to say is, in only a couple moves here, I think I could make the whole entire shape of the Rumble better. And I'm just going to give you a little quick two-minute fantasy booking. So you take Enzo Amore, pull him out. For the time being, you're going to take Roman Reigns completely out of the match. He doesn't need to be there. Really, you could take Apollo Crews too, but I don't really... There's nothing really... Well, I mean, I guess there actually is somebody that I would actually rather have in the Rumble than Apollo Crews as well, so I'll do that. So at 22, instead of it being Bray Wyatt at 22, I think it would have been awesome to have Kane make his return. I don't understand why Kane was not in a Royal Rumble. He had one of the longest tenured records in Royal Rumble history for most eliminations in a Rumble until it was recently beat by fucking Roman Reigns. So at 22, I would have put Kane there. Then Randy Orton comes out. Kane and Randy Orton have had history. Interesting. Dolph Ziggler comes out. Not so much. Harper comes out. Again, history with him and Kane. There's a little bit more. Lesnar comes out. History just in general being in the locker room together. Lesnar's out there. He's just dominated. Let's say he still eliminates Ambrose, Ziggler, and maybe Rusev. We'll change it up a little bit. Number 27, Goldberg is who he's anticipating to see at number 27. Lesnar is pumped. He's jacked. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You suck. You suck. It's Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle comes out. That's fucking epic. A match that needs to happen. One last time, Angle-Lesnar. Please, WWE, make that happen. They can brawl for a few minutes. Lesnar's kind of off his game because he wasn't expecting Kurt Angle to return. Then Goldberg comes out, then Undertaker. You can do the eliminations however you would like. But then at number 30, just for S's and G's, that's where you put Enzo Amore. If you're not going to have it be Samoa Joe because you have bigger plans for him and you're not going to put another special person, that's where you put Enzo. So now that the show started with Cass, ended with Enzo, and it's kind of funny, then they can kind of play on that. Like, oh, you started the Rumble, but you never got to me. I finished the Rumble. I never saw it. You know, ha ha ha. But that's all I would have done differently, mainly speaking on moving as few chess pieces as possible. There's some other things I could technically, other people I would have pulled off. The actually spots 3 through 5 are all people who should not have been in this Rumble, but I digress. Moving on. Go ahead, Brando.
All right, so we're going to move on, and we have what is the rumor about the WWE title going into WrestleMania. So currently, they are playing around with the idea that it's going to be Cena versus Orton at Mania.
I don't want to see it.
But Cena's got to get through the chamber. And this potential tidbit rumor has it Cena not retaining the title at the chamber. He loses to Bray Wyatt.
That'd be awesome.
So then Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton for the WWE title at WrestleMania. And that's going to wrap up their little long storyline that they've been doing.
That'd be interesting. Ultimately, I think you put Bray over if that's how you're going. Randy doesn't need the rub, and personally, I don't need to see John Cena, Randy Orton, 37. They fucking had so many matches against each other throughout the history, dude.
I think Randy wins the feud. That's where I take it. Bray gets his title. He's been horribly misused so many times. Stop and go booking. So I put Orton over at Mania, and then that set, because Orton's a good guy. Because Cena's gonna come and go a little bit. So Orton's a good guy that you can put the title on to heat somebody up and get going, especially if they're gonna do a draft, because then they can move people around. So we're going to go for the official card for the chamber match. The chamber match is going to be John Cena versus Dean Ambrose versus AJ Styles versus Baron Corbin versus Bray Wyatt versus The Miz. Then a tag team turmoil match for the tag titles. American Alpha versus all the tag teams on SmackDown. Naomi versus Alexa Bliss. That pinfall did mean something. And she earned a title match there. And then Nikki Bella versus Natalya is going to probably culminate their feud here. That is the lineup so far. There may be some more matches laid out, but then again, maybe this might be like a shorter pay-per-view, kind of like a la Backlash. It was only like 2.5 hours or something, which I would be okay with.
One match I need to see on the elimination card. Do you know what needs to happen?
What's that?
And I will say I'm bummed this did not happen on SmackDown. And I get it. You just had Joe come up on Raw. You don't want to rush it the very next night. But on SmackDown, I don't know if you watched, you have American Alpha. They're the tag champs. They're telling the audience, no one in the back has stepped up to try to take these from us. Where's the competition? What's the point of having these titles if no one's got the guts to take them from us? And you're saying all this stuff. In the back of my head, I'm going, the Revival? Where the fuck is the Revival? Why aren't they just debuting on SmackDown and reigniting that phenomenal feud that they had?
They could debut in the Turmoil match.
You know, realistically.
Because the Turmoil match, isn't that like the Gauntlet style?
I think so.
That'd be interesting. So, regarding Taker versus Roman Reigns plans, Dave Meltzer notes that Vince has been wanting to do this match for some time, and the feeling is that there might not be another opportunity. Despite being in a lot of pain at the Royal Rumble, it's hopeful that Taker will be rested enough by a Mania to perform a solid lengthy singles match with Roman Reigns. And Taker will apparently be having his actual hip replacement surgery once his career is over. Now, with Reigns, man, if he's going to get booed here, to me, there's no other way around this. Okay? There's no other way around with Reigns getting booed. All right? And I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to make Reigns be somebody. And honestly, the way I see it going, the way that I would do it, if Vince had a stroke and then suddenly Triple H is like, I can't think, and we need Brandon from Journey into Wrestling to come and book this, I would use this to turn Roman heel. I would have him come out and go, I have earned every shot that I've had. I've worked my ass off, went toe-to-toe with Lesnar. I main evented the biggest WrestleMania of all time. And you guys still boo me. I'm sick of this shit. I'm done. He's like, I just don't care anymore. Right now, I don't care about you. I'm winning shit for me. I'm the big dog, and this is my yard. And that's when, yada, yada, yada. That sets that up. And then it's like, traditionally you would have Taker win, but then like if you had Roman win as a heel, like, look, dude, you're set. And have him be come on, you've cemented him as a heel. And then if you play him as this badass heel who can just kick the crap out of everybody within 10 months, you have a really awesome baby face, and you've successfully turned Roman Reigns into the star of the company. So yep. I mean to me that's where you go. With them going, man, we don't want him to be booed. Well, guess what? He's going to be until you do something about it. Until you make him cool enough for everybody. For the kids, for the girls, for the guys. The guys are going to boo him out of that building whether he wins or loses against Undertaker. So,
might as well make it good booing.
You might as well make it good booing. And Taker's already lost a streak. Losing at Mania is not going to mean shit now. But it will give the rub to Roman in the right way if you do it right. If he's just a babyface and he beats Taker, that's the wrong way to go. And I fear that's what they might do. But moving along, latest on Finn Balor's injury. This news came out today. I don't know if you saw this.
Didn't.
It was reported last week that Balor would be evaluated the weekend of the Rumble, and obviously he wasn't. The time frame was late February, early March for him being ready to go. And he seems to be on par with that. And they don't know exactly what they're going to do with him as far as Mania yet. But he should be cleared to go and be there. I personally feel a really easy, easy match to do would be to plug him into a certain storyline where they just lost somebody to injury.
Yep.
And as you said, you take Triple H out of the equation and just plug him in with Joe, and they've wrestled each other and they had a killer feud in NXT, and all of a sudden here's Finn Balor coming to avenge the guy that took him out, you know? However, let's look at the rumored card for Fastlane. How about that? So what we have here is some rematches. Sasha Banks versus Nia Jax, the tag team titles, Cesaro and Sheamus chasing the club. Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman, which is this where they're obviously going. This was done, obviously, before the announcement of the injury. Rollins and Joe was supposed to happen here. Zayn versus Jericho for the United States title.
Ooh.
And the main event is Kevin Owens defending the Universal title against Goldberg. So that takes us into this next part.
Hold on, back up. Wait, Goldberg?
That takes us into the next part. On Monday, Brock Lesnar issued a challenge to Bill Goldberg for WrestleMania. Goldberg is scheduled to appear on this week's show to accept the challenge. However, that may or there may be more to it. The plan is, supposedly, for right now, for next month's Fastlane event, we'll see Goldberg challenging Owens for the Universal title, which he said he wanted to do. He said he's got one more title in him. And then he is expected to go over, win against Owens, and then defend the title against Lesnar at Mania. The belief is that Goldberg will drop the title to Lesnar on the show. As Goldberg's short-term contract obligations will be fulfilled, there's always a possibility that Goldberg could work out another deal and work more dates. If that does happen, there's a possibility that those plans could change. However, in regards on who would capture the title after Lesnar captures it, the top two candidates right now are Roman or Strowman. The company still sees Reigns as their top babyface, so there's my theory about turning him heel going thrown out the window, and they're very high on Strowman's work right now. Now, so you were saying something about the Universal title. There's your Universal title main event, because it was already rumored that Lesnar and Goldberg would be closing the show for Mania. So, and it's for the Universal title. And I don't think they need the title, but it... All right, so here's the thing. I don't think they need the title, okay? I think their feud writes itself. It doesn't need that one extra notch. However, I kind of feel like the Universal title, being a young title, needs this feud. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, because it's going to elevate that title to mean something if it's Lesnar versus Goldberg for the Universal title.
Rather than Owens versus Universal. Balor. I mean, granted, that, come on. We would all jizz in our pants for that match. But it's like, I kind of feel like Owens' spot on the card should be against Jericho. And while I agree it should definitely be Jericho-Owens for the Universal title, that match would mean, like, if Goldberg and Lesnar is already going on last, any other match on the card is going to mean less. And that includes the world titles. So I guess put one of the world titles on them. Now, also, with Rollins' injury, Rollins was supposed to face Triple H. That puts that whole thing up in the air. And the original plan was to have, the original plan was to put Samoa Joe on SmackDown. And he was going to end up facing John Cena at WrestleMania. Now they put him on Raw. I'm like, no, we'll put him over here. And we'll do stuff with Rollins and Triple H. And now with Rollins out, what I'm hearing is that they might go ahead and have him just attack Cena like he attacked Rollins, and like Joe is here to destroy people and he's out to make a name for himself, and he's going to take Cena out like he took Reigns out. But so maybe he costs Cena the title at Elimination Chamber, and then Cena's like, buddy, you're going to have to kill me to stop me. Or I also heard that they might find a way to wiggle their way into a Joe versus Triple H match, where, and at first I'm like, well, how would you do that? He's Triple H's guy. And I'm like, well, what if they do it like Triple H pats him on the back and Joe, like, you think I did that for you? I did it for me.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm nobody's puppet, slave, anybody. I'm Samoa Joe. You know, I'm the next big guy because I said I'm the next big guy. So there's an easy way to get into a little feud match there. But honestly, the nerd in me wants to see Joe and Cena, because we just saw Joe and Styles. So the other dream match from 10 years ago would be Joe and Cena. Yeah. And considering that those two have history and that they came into the business together, even though that's not a main event match on the card, to me, that's a main event match. And I feel like both would really put a lot into that match, and it would be a good match.
Hey, I got a late breaking for you.
What's that?
Other than that there's a train, so I'm so sorry for all of you that actually probably will have to hear that this time. So, according to SE Scoops, yesterday there was a meeting to discuss alternate plans for Rollins. Apparently, you know, Triple H has been training really hard to come back from Mania.
Yeah.
And he looked jacked on Raw. What if it's not Joe, but what if it's Shane McMahon?
Ah, okay. See,
the Raw versus SmackDown angle.
Well, see, and then you could have... That could get fired up because Joe appears on SmackDown. Because the current rumor with Shane is that he would be facing Styles, and Styles feeling like Shane's screwing him, and Shane's not giving him a fair shot, and that SmackDown is a conspiracy against AJ, you know? Which, all due respect to Shane, is like, I don't want to see AJ and Shane. I think they both would work very hard, and it would be entertaining, and that Shane would bump, you know, there's no way Styles loses that match, in my opinion. There's just no way. But to do, I think the more personal storyline would be Shane and Triple H. And there's time enough right now to tell it, especially if within the next 2 weeks, if Joe comes on to Shane's pay-per-view and screws over his guy, the guy that Triple H just brought in, it's like, that's instant. Like, what the hell? Why are you screwing with me and my show? You know? And then it's like Joe and Cena have stuff. And then there's H and Shane. And there's two different matches that are tied to the same kind of thread, you know? So I like it.
I agree. All right. Well, what else do we got for him, Brando?
You know what? That is all I got. I am spent. We sort of just kind of like how the rumors and innuendos and all of the speculations and all that. There was another rumor that they had Cena teaming up with Nikki to face Miz and Maryse.
Dumb.
I kind of agree with that. I really think that the match that is, like, really that should be, like, done is Cena Joe, if you're doing anything right now. And honestly, I kind of feel like even if you're still doing Rollins Triple H, I still think Cena Joe's the way to go.
Okay, I have a thought. Last minute booking. What if instead, well, I guess it doesn't work so much for AJ being in the picture. I was just going to say it would be interesting if AJ was like, you know what? I don't need SmackDown. You guys need me. I'm going to go to Raw and beat Owens for the title. At the same time, Joe's like, I'm going to beat Cena for the title.
Nah.
And then you have, you know what I'm saying? It crosses. They're on opposite shows. They pull the opposite belts back. And nothing has really changed other than the color of the belt.
Yeah, they'd have to change that strap to blue, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, they'd have to figure it out. You don't want that. I mean, or maybe he wears it as a thing of endearment. Like, I got the red strap, whatever. I don't know. Just a little riffage. But, Brando, I don't know. This was an interesting Royal Rumble. We're gearing up to WrestleMania. Here we are. We're less than 60 days away. I cannot wait. That's looking to be one of the busiest weekends of our collective lives.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because that's how we like it. But is there anything else you wanted to add?
Not really, dude, except that we are looking to kind of come back here in like 2 weeks after the Chamber. Hopefully Patrick can join and we can kind of discuss with him what we've discussed and see where his thoughts lie as far as where this goes. I'm very interested. You know what? Part of me, you know, it's the same thing with AJ that I said. I really feel like AJ deserves to go into Mania as champion after him carrying the blue brand. But, like, if there's one guy that I think deserves to win it from him, it's Cena, especially after their awesome matches that they had. And Cena deserves whatever he gets now. But then it's like, man, Owens deserves to go into WrestleMania as champion. And then I'm like, but, I mean, this is like a feather in a hat for Goldberg. You know, it's like, here, congratulations on your career. You get one more world title run and a main event of WrestleMania. And it's like, he deserves it. And then Owens is going to be around a little bit longer, and it's definitely conflicting emotion, because you know you want so much just to have both, but you know that you can't. So
yeah, Goldberg riding off into the sunset, having one more title under his belt, putting some prestige on the Universal title. Yes.
Yeah.
These are all things I think that need to happen. I agree with the way they're booking it. Some of these things might play out to our advantage. Other things might be kind of dumb. There for a hot second, I thought that they were going to insert Taker into that Lesnar-Goldberg feud and do a triple threat style. And then I realized that Lesnar's too old, or that Undertaker is too old, and that Lesnar and Goldberg would just be doing all the work.
Yeah, they did that just to get people to buy the pay-per-view. I mean, it's cool. It was a cool image. Trust me, that was badass. But I do agree it's going to add a little bit of prestige, a little bit of, to the Universal belt. Now, how long does Lesnar hold it if he wins it from Goldberg? It's like, does he hold it until SummerSlam? Is he sort of like how he did with the WWE title, where he does a couple of pay-per-views in between, but then he's kind of not on Raw a whole lot, so you're relying on the other guys to tell the story, and then when he shows up, it means something. Or do you have the Money in the Bank guy cash in on him when he wrestles at Money in the Bank, just like last year when that's what I want to know, is like, how long is Lesnar going to hold this belt? Is he going to be one night? So the next night you think that Roman or Strowman or somebody else should step up and challenge him and win it?
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead and ask who.
Who?
Who? Who? Finn Balor.
Interesting.
I think that's the most bizarre, ballsy thing you can do is the WWE, if you're going to be in control. You have this huge feud between two of the hugest guys in the entire spectrum of wrrestling and the history of, the industry. And then to have, Lesnar come out and go, well, this is boring. I've beat everybody in the back. What else is there for me? There's nothing. There's nothing you guys can offer me because I beat everything in there. Boom. Finn's music hits and, he's in demon form right out the gate. And Lesnar's a little bit like, what the fuck is this? What?
I don't watch wrestling. What is this?
Yeah, is this kid for real? Like, what am I missing, And then have Finn go in there and put the sticks to him. Maybe give Lesnar a couple big spots that really hurt Finn, allegedly. But David versus Goliath the shit out of that shit and have Finn beat him. The place would go nuts. It'd be the biggest post-WrestleMania moment in our collective memory, I think. Bigger than Dolph's win on the cash-in. Whole nights.
Interesting. Again, it's like we don't even know what Finn's going to be doing. He has to be involved somehow. So, I think that's going to do it for us for now, until episode 16 next, here in a few weeks, where we can sort of take what we've learned and see what happens at the Chamber and look at seeing what's going to happen at Fastlane. And we can really try to put together, that Mania card a little bit, hopefully with a little bit more clearer notion, especially with what's going to happen at the Chamber. If Bray walks out, if Joe shows up, or if he doesn't show up. I mean, it's almost like they get off sometimes on doing exactly what you like, or not doing exactly what you want them to do, and then doing exactly what you don't want them to do. But somehow, sometimes it works out.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
But, buddy, I think we need to plug our stuff.
Yeah, go see our stuff at places and things.
Yeah, so...
where you find us.
So we are on the Journey to Comics feed. Of course, you can find us on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play Music. If you want to go listen to old episodes of Journey to Comics and check out some of the older episodes of Journey to Wrestling that are on there, you can go to journeyintocomics.podbean.com or head over to the YouTube, which I haven't updated in a while. That's my fault, guys. Laziness, and it just takes time to render these videos. I swear I'm going to get that up to date here soon. But the RSS feed only pushes out like 30 or so episodes. So if you want to go back and listen to more, definitely check out those avenues. You'll be able to do so. We got a new episode of Journey into Comics also coming up. We're going to be doing that tomorrow.
Yeah, Journey into Comics with new equipment. I'm so excited.
Oh, dude, so that's actually going to be there tomorrow?
It's there today.
Ah!
If I was in Lipston today, I would have had it today.
So are you going to go pick it up tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going down to spend the night with Pops.
Yeah,
hang out with him.
Hell yeah, dude. It's going to be awesome. Nate got a new microphone for his iPad, and we're going to be Skyping in. This is awesome because now I'm recording on my end, and I feel like I'm helping.
Well, you're doing a great job, Randall. The quality's awesome. I've listened to 123 a couple times. By the way, we had a huge announcement on Journey into Comics 123 with LaffyCon and all that's going on there. Make sure to check out that episode. Also, make sure to go on to YouTube and please, 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 please give a subscribe to Game Addicts Play.
Oh.
I watched those dudes, and I cleaned my whole house yesterday to Game Addicts Play. And it was relaxing, and it was watching you guys talk about different games and stuff. It's a lot of fun. That's Brandon's other podcast, by the way, if you don't know Game Addicts Podcast. But go on YouTube. Their channel's really awesome.
You can also check out Journey Podcast and everywhere where we're available, and that is iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and Google Play Music.
Heck yeah, bro.
So I think with that, we're going to send this home. We're going to go home, and I'm going to eat some food, man, because I'm hungry.
I ate on the show. Hopefully you guys didn't hear that.
Yeah, see, the iPad mic sometimes picks up too much. And unfortunately, you got a train, which on your Shure mic doesn't really pick it up. But on the iPad mic, everybody just heard that train. It's going to kill their ears. Hopefully, if I can remember, I'm going to try and do a little magic on that and maybe make that... I think you were talking during it, though, so I don't know. We're going to have to try and work this out because since we're recording in a different way, that maybe when that train hits, maybe we need to instinctively stop for like a few seconds and then...
Or shut my mic off. I'll have that option, I think. The IQ7 has an off button.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do that and we'll just do the old school, we'll stop talking and then we'll try and pick it up where we were or whatever. And we'll just acknowledge that a train went through and we'll cut that out. That way there's no disrupting train.
Well, if that's going to do it, Brando, I think that's it for me. I don't have anything else to add. No,
nope. That's it for me. Until next time, which is in 2 weeks time. I hope I am your host, Brando.
And I'm Nate.
And we have been Journey into Wrestling. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Later.